Marriage. Is it a sexy slumber party with your best friend every night for the rest of your life, sanctioned by the state? Or is it a terrifying and risky business merger permanently binding your financial and familial reality to somebody else's? Gay rights attorney and author Elizabeth Schwartz is here to help us figure it out with her new book, Before You Say I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay and Otherwise. I'm your host, Emma Brecon. That's what we're talking about on Through the Eyes of Women, coming up next on KHSU. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program about the lives and perspectives of women local, national, and international. Just because you can get married doesn't necessarily mean you should. That is the message of Elizabeth Schwartz's new book, Before You Say I Do. She's here to help us make our decisions wisely. Hello, Elizabeth. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Thank you for having me.
First question, I suppose we should know what we're talking about, Elizabeth. How would you answer somebody's query? What is marriage?
Marriage is a contract that you and your partner are entering into with the state. It means that you are bound by a whole system that governs all kinds of things, from what happens at death and divorce, how you're assets get divided up, what's considered to be household income. You, by getting married, agree to be governed by state laws regarding aspects of your life that you might not think are any of the government's business. But alas, that's what you're signing up for.
And Elizabeth, am I reading in your book an assertion that now that we have marital equality for all and LGBT people are entering marriage, are you asserting that it's possible that after fighting for years and generations for this right, that maybe they didn't understand what they were getting themselves into?
Well, certainly I would never say that we didn't deserve this right. Of course we did. And of course we do. And of course we need to keep it. But all I'm saying is that because of these many years of pent-up demand, that I think some folks, I dealing with it in my practice every day, as are many of my colleagues, that some folks are jumping into marriages without necessarily having a full sense of the legal consequences associated with marriage. So it's not to say don't get married, it's just to say know what you're getting yourself into if this is something that you decide to do, understand what the legal consequences of it are, and protect yourself if that's what needs to happen.
Is this any different from hetero couples marrying foolishly and making poor decisions? Because we've been doing that for a really long time.
Right, yes, exactly. Thank you. Thank you for setting the example for us for so long.
You're welcome.
Las Vegas Britney Spears marriages. I guess in my fantasy, I had hoped that we would do marriage a little better, a little differently. But here's the way I think that it's different. First of all, certainly in the LGBT community, I think even though this was a battle that was over 45 years long, it is still something that has come, I think, relatively quickly in terms of the lives of many of us who've been in this movement. So I don't think that there's been this kind of widespread paying attention to what marriage means, what it looks like. I mean, I think you might have sort of watched your parents' marriages and thought, okay, well, that's something I got to kind of know because one day I'm going to probably be involved in such a thing.
They're giving you a good or poor example,
exactly,
I suppose.
Exactly right, exactly right. And so there are things, I think, that are different, though, about our community. You know, first of all, of course, there is still homophobia. I mean, it's not, you can't just say marriage is marriage is marriage. There are lots of ways in which homophobia permeates the culture and makes life still challenging. The other thing just to kind of think about is that for a lot of us getting married, we've been together for many, many years. So just getting married is not necessarily going to solve all of our relationship issues. So, for example, a couple after being together for 20 years, then they legally marry and then they split up. If you have a couple in that kind of a circumstance, the law is going to treat them like a short-term marriage. And that matters for purposes of how assets are divided, if there's alimony, spousal support given at the end of marriage. So it may be that if you're in such a situation, you want to actually think about having an agreement in place, a prenuptial agreement, that would actually provide that your marriage is really a long-term marriage, so that if, God forbid, you were to split up, you would be provided for. You would be treated like a spouse of a long-term marriage.
So palimony or common law things don't kick in those situations for our non-hetero friends?
Well, state laws are different. State by state, you know, there are differences in how that would look. But no, I mean, for the most part, your marriage is treated like a marriage. Now, there are kind of mitigating circumstances. There's ways that you can expand the length of your relationship under the law. You know, I would definitely say that anybody who's in a situation like that, anyone who's within the sound of my voice who has been in a long-term relationship and a short-term marriage really owes it to themselves to see an attorney in their jurisdiction and see if their intentions to provide for one another at death and divorce would be realized under their state's current law.
And what is a postnuptial agreement?
Well, a postnuptial agreement is basically a prenuptial agreement, but that's entered into after the marriage. That is my kind of it's never too late pitch. You know, if you decide that you need to modify the default of the law in any way and you have already married, it is not too late to do so. You can do a postnuptial agreement. It's sort of one of the things that I lament a bit about this book, which is the title, Before I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay and Otherwise. You know, Before I Do seems to be implying to the reader that if you have already married, then it's too late and you can't do anything else to change that. Well, there are indeed, as you mentioned, postnuptial agreements, and should you need to modify the default in the laws, and you're already married, that's one way to do it.
I'd like to circle back to something you said earlier. You said that even now, in this bold new age of marital equality, we don't get to just say marriage is marriage is marriage. How come?
Well, there is still homophobia, and that is rampant. And
how does that affect a marriage between two people?
So, for example, I had some clients who reached out to me, married couple, we're having dinner, traveling, and one of the guys had a terrible reaction to, I think it was the shrimp. They go to the hospital, and the nurse was like, who the hell are you? Well, I'm his husband. And she says, well, do you have a marriage license? Well, I don't have a marriage license. Well, we don't have marriage, you know, between gay people here, so kind of who the hell are you? Well, fortunately, this guy was a client I had done his estate planning. They had their health care surrogate documents in place. In fact, they also had another thing that I do for clients, which is enroll them in this DocuBank service. And DocuBank is a way that you can have all of those advanced directives, your living will, health care surrogate, guardianship designation, uploaded and then available. You get a card and it's got your PIN number on it and stuff. So he was messaging me after the fact to tell me, guess what this crazy thing that happened? We were married and the marriage didn't help us a whit, but thank God we had our estate planning documents in place because that woman, she didn't care who the heck I was. She didn't care if I said I was his husband or whatever. And of course they didn't have a marriage license on them because who carries around their marriage license, gay or straight? But I mean, I think that's an example of how homophobic laws and people, you know, all he wanted was to be by his husband's side when he was going through this kind of crazy health scare, you know, in a foreign country. That is one among many examples of how, you know, we still experience homophobia in our culture. It's still something that's very much part of our realities. And so it is extremely important that people still have their estate planning documents in place so that any kind of experience, just because the marriage is legal, doesn't mean it's respected by everyone with whom you might come into contact with.
So when we are considering this, when we are at that before I say I do place, and we've met somebody wonderful, and we think we're compatible, and we think we want to really, 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 really be together, what are the good reasons to go ahead and get married?
Well, aside from the beautiful romantic reasons,
which is usually the last thing that married people bring up, is the romantic.
Right, right. This is where it gets so individual, right? I mean, it's a hard question to answer generally, but certainly I tell people, you know, the first stop is going to the CPA and making sure that you're not going to take a huge tax hit, because every financial circumstance is different. For some people, there's a marriage penalty, depending on their income. For some people, there's a marriage bonus, depending on their income. Certainly, from an estate tax and gift tax perspective, we don't have to worry about making any transfers to our partners. So in other words, if you want to give your partner, you know, $1 million, get it out of your name, put it in your partner's name, there's no gift tax for that. If you want to put your spouse on your house, there's no gift tax associated with that. If you die, pass assets to your spouse, there's no estate tax consequence for that. So for many people, that's an important thing. For folks who are having children, having a child born into a marriage means that that child can benefit from what's known as a marital presumption, which means that a child born into a marriage is presumed to be the child of both spouses. That, for some people, is very important. There are reasons having to do with different benefits including Social Security benefits, you know, certain means-based benefits that could be a reason for folks to want to marry, because they might be able to provide benefits to their partner, like retirement benefits and stuff like that. You know, lots of states have pensions, states and private companies, I should say, government pensions, where you can't give them to anyone other than a legally wedded spouse or a minor child under the age of 25. So there could be, you know, financial reasons in that regard to think about to getting married. You know, owning property, there are in many states, one of the best ways to own property jointly is to own it as what's called tenants by the entireties. And that is the way that only legally wedded spouses can own property. And that is excellent protection against the claims of creditors, better protection than any other way of owning property. So for some people, that's really important. You know, I've talked to doctors who said, I got to get married because I want to be sure to be able to protect all of our assets in the event that anybody ever sues me.
And then what are some good reasons to hold off? What are some signs that maybe marriage is not the best thing to do with this particular relationship?
Well, again, aside from all of the emotional reasons, if this person is maybe not the right person for you, I mean, certainly there can be red flags in relationships where the person is a lovely, wonderful person, but maybe there's potential liabilities. You know, in other words, they have lots of debt or they've got tax liabilities, you know, stuff that you don't want to take on. Those are some instances where you want to think about maybe holding off on getting married so as not to take on those liabilities, although certainly if that's a concern and you do want to marry, you absolutely want to make sure that you have a prenuptial agreement in place articulating that you are not taking on any liabilities at all, present or future. But I would say, you know, for a lot of people, I think that the big concern is taking on those automatic rights on death and divorce. And that is a reason that many folks choose not to marry. And even though you can make modifications with prenuptial agreements and estate planning documents, certainly there's a concern, you know, that maybe those might not hold up. So, but absolutely, the main reason I would say that people who are not getting married are not getting married is because of this sort of general, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and I never really liked marriage much anyway, so why would I start now? There are many voices in the LGBT community who came to marriage even a little reluctantly, thinking this is kind of this hetero bougie institution that we don't need. So one of the reasons I really wanted to make sure that I wrote this book was because I feel badly that there seems to be this assumption now that if you're not married, it's because you don't love each other. You know, if you're in a relationship, in a committed relationship, then certainly you're going to want to marry because you can. And for a lot of people, they don't want to, and they shouldn't have to. It doesn't mean that they're not committed to one another, of course. So I think I call it in the book kind of the ick factor, you know, that certainly there are many people who are just turned off by the whole concept of marriage. And I totally appreciate the value of protecting yourself and expressing your love and commitment in all kinds of ways that don't have to include marriage if that's not what you want. I think for folks who are open to it, there are things you can do to protect yourself. I will say I see a lot of folks with kids, you know, who had kids from a prior relationship, and they don't want to get married because they're worried that then if they die, their child doesn't inherit, then if they divorce, that they're going to lose assets. They wanted to retain for their child. Absolutely, we can prepare documents to make sure that that still happens, that those intentions are fulfilled.
You are listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Brecon, and we are speaking with gay rights attorney and author Elizabeth Schwartz about her new book, Before You Say I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay and Otherwise. Elizabeth, what is your personal marital situation?
I am personally married, and thank you for asking, because I think it's always so important to talk about that, because it sounds like all I'm doing is just poo-pooing on marriage when I'm not at all. I'm only wanting people to have their eyes wide open, as I was. I was with my partner for 11 years when we decided to marry. It was right after the 2013 Windsor decision, which made the federal ban on marriage equality go away, and where the Supreme Court of the United States declared DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, unconstitutional. And we then decided, you know what, now that there are benefits, actual benefits associated with marriage, that this was something we wanted to do. So I talked to my financial advisor and my CPA, and we tied the knot.
And I'm assuming you did a lot of homework. You didn't go into it lightly. What kind of preparation was there? You said you saw the CPA. Did you do anything else special before you jumped into this?
Well, yeah, we had a lot of communication. We talked a great deal. We prepared documents that memorialized what our intentions were. So we were very clear what would happen in the event of death, in the event of divorce. And we were, I think, also, you know, very mindful that people pay attention to what we do. That since I have been such an outspoken advocate for marriage and for conscious, mindful marriage, it was, I think, something that we felt strongly we needed to do wisely, and I think we did.
And with all your expertise and experience and your professional position, were there any surprises?
Yeah, I guess that there were a few. I mean, one thing that we did that was kind of funny was, you know, we married in a jurisdiction in Vermont where you could get divorced in the event that you had to get divorced, because Vermont retained jurisdiction to resolve our disputes. So if we had married in Massachusetts and then, God forbid, broken up, we would have probably had to go back to Massachusetts and live there for a year to have Massachusetts take jurisdiction of our divorce. Vermont didn't do that. So people were very kind of shocked that we were thinking about divorce as we got married. But as I say, you know, I need to practice what I preach. And I was telling people at the time, you know, only get married in jurisdictions where, if God forbid you split up, you'll have the ability to not have to move back there. You could just send in your divorce documents. So I was surprised that people were so surprised that we were being mindful about that. I was also surprised, and I write about it a little bit in the book, how the marriage took on this new heft for other people in my life. My nephew, who really had known my wife as long as he had known me, because he was that young, you know, he really was like, wow, you know, now I have a new aunt. And it's like, well, she was your aunt anyway, you know. And my brother, who's very close with my wife, who knows how much of a voice she has in the family, he said, oh, now you've got a formal vote in the family. And he knows that if anything ever happens, my mother calls our house and says, put Lydia on the phone. She doesn't want to talk to me. She wants to talk to my wife. You know, she is the vote of my household with regard to my family dramas. So, you know, I was sort of surprised in a way that even after 11 years together at that time, that the relationship becoming legal was really so meaningful, I guess, to others.
Is that what marriage is? Is it not so much proving to each other, the two people in the marriage, that we love each other and that we're committed, but demonstrating to our community and our society that we have made this commitment and that we need them and legally require them to honor our choice?
Yes, I do think that is a big part of what marriage is. I mean, certainly marriage is, for many of us in our community, just one more evidence of the love and commitment that we have been showing for many years. You know, lots of folks are just jumping into marriages, and they've only been together for a minute. And as you said earlier in the show, that is no different from what hetero folks have been doing from time immemorial. But for lots of LGBT couples who have been long awaiting this rite, this is something that at long last they're able to do, and that is not much different than how committed they already were to one another. But this does make us equal in our commitment in the eyes of the law and in the eyes of the rest of the community, which is certainly extremely important.
You told us a little bit about your client's experience having trouble having their legal marriage recognized abroad. What kind of report card would you like to give us domestically for equal treatment of these marriages?
Gosh, you know, it's hard to give sort of an overall grade. I guess I would give it a B, because I am certainly hearing lots of stories of still those kind of Kim Davises, you know, the clerks in parts of the country who are not wanting to issue marriage licenses. I think we've seen the Trump campaign a powerful voice for turning back the clock, you know, people who are saying, yes, we want you to get elected and appoint a Supreme Court justice who will, as he would say, restore traditional marriage. So I absolutely am very concerned that this is not an issue that is deemed to be settled. I mean, you would certainly think after two Supreme Court cases strongly articulating the fundamental right to marry that this issue would be put to bed, but I don't think it has been. But having said that, I think certainly we're hearing lots of nice stories of how the baker or the florist wasn't so into having to provide services to this same-sex couple getting married, but they did, and they got over it, and they found that it was a sweet and meaningful experience, and it didn't compromise their religious beliefs, not at all. So we're happy to hear those stories of people getting educated and moving beyond their fear.
Are there some next steps to that? What is the real equality going to look like?
I think there are lots of next steps, and I appreciate you bringing that up, because it's certainly a painful thought to see how many in our community are becoming apathetic, thinking that now we have marriage equality, that we are done. And certainly marriage does not solve everyone's problems. Not everybody's in a relationship. So lots of folks live in parts of the country, in rural parts of the country, where they're still experiencing strong homophobia. There is, you know, not a comprehensive employment discrimination protection. There are employment discrimination protections for sure, but we still need to enact comprehensive federal employment discrimination, and that's very important. And look, marriage does not fix homophobia. It doesn't fix transphobia, doesn't fix ageism, sexism, racism, classism. And we're still experiencing not just the same discrimination as before, but in some cases, greater backlash as people resist this progress. So I know that we will get there. It's going to be a long road, and folks need to stay engaged. But what we're hoping folks understand is that marriage does not magically translate into full lived equality throughout our whole community. People of color are certainly still experiencing grave discrimination. You know, as I say, folks who don't live in major metropolitan cities have a culture of homophobia. And of course, even those major metropolitan cities, there's still substantial homophobia and employment discrimination. And my gosh, we have so much work to do to protect members of our transgender community. I mean, you're seeing all this panic with these crazy bathroom bills. You know, we need to, as a community, stay united and continue to press for greater protections for our trans brothers and sisters.
Thanks, Elizabeth. As we approach the end of our time together, my final question for you, what do you love about being married?
I love that this is where it gets personal, and it's like, let me not cry. I love the sense of safety and stability, specifically that it gave my partner. We together decided that she was going to quit her full-time job as a journalist and pursue a fiction career. And she always had this feeling of guilt and sort of worry about that. And as much as I would try to say, listen, we made this decision together. This is an investment that I think is important. I have faith in your ability. I don't think she felt as safe until we actually got married. And also, at the time when we made the decision to get married, my father and her mother were both very sick, and those are both two parents for whom seeing us be married, it was very important to them. And so I have to say, the thing I'm most happy about is not just that I gave her that sense of safety and security, but also that we were able to give that feeling of peace to those parents, and both of those parents have since passed away, and they got to see us married, and that meant a lot to them.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for sharing with us and maybe dropping a little bit of knowledge on us. We sure appreciate having you here on Through the Eyes of Women.
Thank you, Emma. I appreciate you having me.
This was super fun. Have a great one.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Brakan, and I've been speaking with gay rights attorney and author Elizabeth Schwartz about her new book, Before You Say I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay and Otherwise. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer, Jessica Eden, and to our entire production team. You can listen to this show again anytime and Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives. Visit our blog at khsuwomen.com and be sure to join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.